Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Wild and Outdoor Review. Wild is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Business in Missouri. Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Admiralty when we come back. Well, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, reduced to incompetence, incapacity. We have been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions of our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs, doctors to manage and treat our health problems, and lawyers to direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. Now, that's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by these paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, our rights, our liberties, and our duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? It's educational, informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. Just call and ask 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and send us an email. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, as we discovered by looking through the legal encyclopedia, Admiralty primarily works on ships and on the ocean up to the high tide mark. But we have observed over the last 200 years that slowly but surely, like a camel sticking his nose in the tent, Admiralty has moved inland. Now, Congress has the power to regulate interstate commerce. And commerce is called intercourse. One of its most ordinary ingredients is called traffic. In the Bible, they're referred to as Canaanite traffickers. Canaanite traffickers. That's commerce. Strictly prohibited in Scripture. We Americans eat commerce three times a day. We have little groups that we call chambers of commerce in every city in America to promote commerce. And our founding fathers put commerce right into our Constitution. Very prominently so. You know, the founding fathers were nice guys, but they weren't all saints, and they weren't all godly men. And in fact, they didn't all practice the laws of God. They practiced a lot of them, not all of them. And one of their things in life was they wanted to proceed into commerce. Commerce is where the money's to be made. Want to make money? Commerce is it. Now, the opposite to that is property and property rights. Now, we have a choice to make, and we've made our choice. If we have to choose between property and commerce, we want commerce. We want checks and negotiable instruments. We want mortgages. We want adjustable rate mortgages. We want to be able to buy a house with very little money down so that we can speculate on the value of that house into the future. We want to speculate under the terms of contracts over time for profit and gain, which generates income, for which we pay income tax. And then we want to complain about our government and their taxing policies and the state of Michigan. What did that guy call that state of Michigan now? The People's Republic of Michigan. Hey, kids, I don't see that you can blame God for this. I'm not even sure that we should blame government. It's a choice that we have to make, and we make the choice, and then when we make the choice, you complain about the outcome? Oh, I don't think that that's going to fly anywhere. I don't think that airplane's going to fly. You go into the judgment, and you tell God that, well, gee, I just couldn't help myself. I had to participate in commerce. I had to have a business license, and I had to have insurance, and I had to do all these things over here. I don't think he's going to buy that program. And on the other hand, over here, you know, the commercial man, when you say, oh, I don't think I owe this tax, I'm a common law citizen, I'm a sovereign, I've got rights, and he's not going to buy that. Now, you know, if you've got these Siemens papers, you know, such as a driver's license, registration on your car, you've got an insurance policy, social security number, marriage license, business license, you know, you're drawing welfare, food stamps, hey, you've got to have Siemens papers to do that. And when you've got Siemens papers, you come under Admiralty. And that Admiralty doesn't work exclusively on the oceans. It works in downtown Chicago on the Loop. It works in Lower Manhattan. It works in Los Angeles. It works in Casper, Wyoming, Austin, Texas. It works everywhere. Now, remember, we showed you here that Commerce and admiralty work hand in hand, and that admiralty jurisdiction could come from commerce, but not exclusively. It can come from other sources other than commerce, but by God, it's going to come from commerce if it doesn't come from any other source. When a shipload of shoes comes from China to New York and it gets loaded on a railroad car and it's shipped to Los Angeles or Chicago or someplace else, it's still in commerce. That's a maritime contract, kids. And we're not talking about thou shalt not steal. We're talking about contract, overtime for profit and gain. And although commerce includes traffic in this narrower sense, for more than a century, it's been judicially recognized that in a broad sense, it embraces every phase of commercial and business activity and intercourse. So says Jordan VK versus K Tashiro, 278 U.S. 123. Every business activity and intercourse in his commercial commerce comes under admiralty. Now, in 1815, in the case of Delovio v. Boyd, written by Justice Story, the Supreme Court ruled the following. They said, the admiralty from the highest antiquity has exercised a very extensive criminal jurisdiction and punished offenses by fine and imprisonment. The celebrated Inquisition at Queensborough in the reign of Edward III would alone be decisive, and even at common law had been adjudged that the admiralty might fine for contempt. Appeal, and not a writ of error, lies from its decrees. Kids, they haul you into federal district court, charge you with tax evasion or willful failure to file, and what do? Write a writ of error on appeal? Do you write a writ of error, or do you write an appeal? Appeal. Come on. Which is, if you had a common law action, it would be a writ of error. If you've got an admiralty action, it's called an appeal. Now, you file an appeal. Ultimately, you file a writ of certiorari to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is an extraordinary remedy. Now, the admiralty from the highest antiquity. Highest antiquity. My God, this admiralty goes back into ancient times. It goes way back past Moses. And that's why God called it Canaanite trafficking, and that's why he condemned it, and he said, don't do it. Practice property and property rights. Practice gold and silver and leave the paper out. And I ask people, you know, all the time, I say, well, do you practice gold and silver coin? No, I got checks and credit cards, and I have to use them because, you know, everybody else does. Oh, is that right? You have to use it. Somebody's putting a gun to your head, and if you don't use it, they're going to pull the trigger. Well, no, that's not exactly right. So since 1986, kids, we've had gold and silver coin here in the United States minted every day, at least 5 days a week. West Point, New York, National Mint, gold and silver coin. It's available to us, and it's available in denominations of 50, 25, 10, and $5 gold pieces, and $1 silver dollars. Been around now for a long time, 1986, now it's 20 years. And in 20 years, the American people have not gone back to using gold and silver coin. They prefer paper. Americans prefer paper. I'll bet you Canadians, you've had gold up there for longer than we've had it down here in the United States. And you Canadians use paper and credit cards, and you prefer paper and credit cards. And so do you Australians. And you've got gold, and you've got silver there, too. So, boys and girls, we're without excuse. When you come in here to the judgment, and God says, hey, were you using gold? No. I didn't use gold because I had to use paper because that's what the government gave me. And you couldn't resist. You couldn't say no. I mean, you're like some girl that's spreading her legs, you know. Could you just say no, he raped me. Kids, rape requires resistance, and if there's no resistance, taint rape. I don't see any resistance here. I don't see anybody that has to use paper money or adjustable rate mortgages. It's a choice that you have to make, and you people are making your choice. I'm just here as a reporter to remind you that there's going to be a penalty to pay for that choice that you make. There's going to be an outcome that comes from that choice. The creator of the universe said, don't use paper. You said, no, we're going to use paper. He said, don't use insurance. You say, no, we're going to use insurance. He says, don't make any covenants or contracts with these foreign and alien gods. You say, no, I need a driver's license and I need a marriage license. Okay, but don't get mad now when God kicks you up between the hind end, you know, and kicks your hind end up around between your eyebrows someplace. And then don't get angry with him and say, hey, listen, you're treating me unfair. Now, last week I told you now in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, he said, now, you guys made a deal with me, and you better keep up your end of the deal, because if you don't keep up your end of the deal, there's going to be hell to pay. And we're not keeping up our end of the deal, and I suspect there's going to be hell to pay, and you're going to complain bitterly and complain about the People's Republic of Michigan has turned into the hell of God Almighty. And I'm saying, well, you know, hey, it was a choice you had to make, and you made it. Maybe you should have bet on the other side. So this admiralty from the highest antiquity has exercised a very extensive criminal jurisdiction and punished offenses by fine and imprisonment. And yet it's conceded on all sides that of maritime hypothecations, the admiralty has jurisdiction. Hypothecation. God, that's a big, long word. Hypothecation. It's a conference or a transfer of liability. An insurance policy is a hypothecation of liability from me to the insurance company. And so it's conceded on all sides that the maritime hypothecations or insurance policies, the admiralty has jurisdiction. The jurisdiction of the admiralty depends, or ought to depend, as to contracts upon the subject matter, for example, whether maritime or not, and as to torts upon locality. Whether the judicial act neither the judicial acts nor the Constitution, which it follows limit the admiralty jurisdiction of the district court in any respect to place. It is bound only by the nature of the cause over which it is to decide. Kids, admiralty doesn't ride on the high seas. It rides any place that the district court decides that it rides. So when you walk in there and you're complaining about my common law rights and I'm a Christian and blah, 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 hey, that's probably true. You probably are a Christian, and that's why you're in trouble. I call them Christian criminals. Christian criminals. Christians are criminal-minded people who want to practice all of these criminal activities. They want to go to Flo's Whorehouse, but they don't want to get AIDS, herpes, or VD. They want to break the law, but they don't want to pay the penalty. They want to evade their income tax, and they want to get away with it, and they're just mad as hell when they get caught. And they turn around and say, well, we don't owe the income tax. Well, that's true. You don't owe an income tax if, in fact, you were tithing and obeying God and keeping His commandments, but you don't want to obey God and keep His commandments, and you don't want to pay the income tax. You want to work in commerce, but you don't want to follow the rules of commerce. Christians, in general, are anarchists. They don't want to practice the law of the state, and they don't want to practice the law of God. And then they want to get away with their criminal activities, and they get real angry and real mean, mad, nasty against God and against the state prosecutor over here for prosecuting him. Now, I've been doing this for 20 years, and my experience has been this. You obey God and keep His commandments, and the state prosecutors don't bother you. All of my problems came from state prosecutors that were prosecuting me for being a virgin whore. I walked into Judge Schmidt's office one day, and we were chit-chatting a little bit, and I complained to him about the People's Republic of Idaho. And he asked me, he said, have you got a Social Security number? And I said, yeah. So what? And he said, now, you've got a Social Security number, but you're complaining about the income tax and the taxes that go with it. Why are you doing that, Gordon? I didn't have any answer. I didn't know. I didn't know what Social Security was. I was just kind of ignorant, you know, just kind of dumb. I'm complaining about the income tax. I got a taxpayer identification number. I mean, that's like complaining about the Army after you've got an Army enlistment contract. What, you went down and joined the Army, and now you're complaining about the service? The hell is this craziness? You join the Army and then complain about the service? How does that make any sense? You get a driver's license and complain about the highway patrolman? You get a marriage license and a birth registration and complain about social lady? Kids, that doesn't make any sense at all. Now, the jurisdiction of admiralty depends or ought to depend as to contracts upon the subject matter and whether maritime or not. They don't have to be on the ocean. And as to torts upon locality, neither the judicial act nor the Constitution, which it follows, limits the admiralty jurisdiction of the district court in any respect to place. Hey, they can operate anywhere they want to. It's bounded only by the nature of the cause over which it is to decide. What's the nature of the cause? Social Security? Income tax? Driver's license? Speeding? Beating your kid? Truancy? Public school? Vaccination? On the whole, I am without the slightest hesitation, said Justice Story now, ready to pronounce that the delegation of cognizance of all civil cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction to the courts of the United States comprehends all maritime contracts, torts, and injuries. The latter branch is necessarily bounded by locality. The former extends over all contracts, wheresoever they may be made or executed, or whatsoever may be the form of the stipulations which relate to the navigation, business, or commerce of the sea. So when that ship hits port and they transfer that load onto railroad cars, you're still in maritime commerce. That's the bottom line. And when you develop insurance or when you participate in insurance, you're practicing maritime commerce. Now, the system that's set up, the adjudicatory process over here, is a summary process without juries, without rights, without a constitution, without a bill of rights. It's the equivalent of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I mean, you know, it's a summary process. You walk in. How do you plead guilty or not guilty? You're a soldier in the Army. Don't give us any of this demur crap. Do you know that under the common law, there's 47 extraordinary remedies? Under the civil law, there's one called appeal. And it's not extraordinary. It's usual and ordinary. And this is the complaint that the judges and the judicial people have about the common law. It's too complex, and it aims at justice. And it takes too long. It's too costly, too expensive, takes too long. The theory behind justice is we would rather turn a guilty man loose than to lock an innocent man up. Under the admiralty, they simply say, well, if you can't prove you're innocent, then you must be guilty. If you can't prove your innocence, you've got to be guilty. What the hell kind of justice is that? So I mentioned to you the other day, you know, God himself complained that there was no justice in the land. The land is full of bloody crimes. Have you ever thought about the bloody crimes here in America? 27 million murders a year? Murders. That's just one bloody crime. Then you got rape on top of that. That's another bloody crime. Yeah, the land is filled with these kinds of crimes, and there got to be a logical methodology for dealing with them. And when you deal with these kinds of crimes, It takes a lot of time, effort, and energy. Look at the O.J. Simpson case. That's a common law trial with a jury binding upon the outcome and a slow, meticulous methodology for going through and identifying names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. Boy, you don't have that problem with an admiralty court. You don't have that problem in traffic court, do you? Hey, you never saw a traffic court case drag out for several months, have you? And that's why they want to deal with those prisoners down in Guantanamo under the common law. They want to deal with them under a summary process under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You know, bring them in here, find them guilty, and kill them. Hang them. Now, the next inquiry is, what are properly to be deemed maritime contracts? Happily, in this particular, there's little room for controversy. All civilians and jurists agree that in this appellation are included, among other things, maritime hypothecations and, what is more material to our present purposes, policies of insurance. Hey, policies of insurance. Every time you go out and buy an insurance policy, you are in admiralty. And by the way, insurance is prima facie evidence of income. How's that? Income. Now, my judgment accordingly is that policies of insurance are within, though not exclusively within, the admiralty and maritime jurisdiction of the United States. DeLovio versus Boyd. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled no commercial enterprise of any kind which conducts its activities across state lines has been held to be wholly beyond the regulatory power of Congress under the Commerce Clause. We cannot make an exception to of the business of insurance. United States versus Southeastern Underwriters Association, 1944. In a later case, a federal court stated that the court takes judicial notice that insurance is now interstate commerce under the Commerce Clause of the federal Constitution. In accordance with the Supreme Court decision in the case of United States versus Southeastern Underwriters. Now let's take a look at transportation. You know, once upon a time, the jurisdiction of admiralty stopped at the high tide mark. However, the Supreme Court of the United States, ruling on a case regarding a collision on Lake Ontario in 1851, said, and if the admiralty jurisdiction in matters of contract and tort, which the courts of the United States may lawfully exercise on the high seas, can be extended to the lakes under the power to regulate commerce, it can, with the same propriety and upon the same construction, be extended to contracts and torts on land when the commerce is between different states, and it may embrace also the vehicles and the persons engaged in carrying it on. See that word, vehicles? Admiralty. Vehicles, traffic court, fringe flag. Are you starting to get the connection there, Charlie? And then you got a driver's license, registration, proof of insurance. The insurance puts you into commerce. Commerce puts you into maritime admiralty. See, this admiralty, if you're gonna deal with insurance, then insurance doesn't always operate on the high seas. So what we've done is we have simply mired ourselves down in this foreign, alien, pagan, ideological idea that we're going to practice admiralty jurisdiction in our law. We're going to practice the adversarial system rather than the justice system. Well, okay. Okay. So you want to look after the pagan nations around us. How do they worship their gods, and we'll do likewise? That's what you got in mind? Because that's what we're doing here. Now, we Americans, Britons, Canadians, Australians, Frenchmen, you know, all of us Western Europeans, we have a god. We've given him the finger, and we said, we're not going to practice your law. We're going to practice the law of the Chinese, the Japanese, the Russians, the Bolivians, the Indians, everybody else in the world. We're going to worship their gods, and we're not going to worship. We're not going to obey our gods. That's what worship is, by the way. Worship is the obedience of the law of your god. So when you practice the law that says, thou shalt not steal, you're worshiping the God of Abraham. When you go out here and practice theft, then you're worshiping some other god, the god of theft, primarily the American Bar Association. I can't think of a bigger bunch of thieves than lawyers. If there is, I don't know who they are. The business people, you know, are taking bribes, and you got all these lobbyists over here and business people, and they're thieves, but they can't steal one-tenth what the lawyers can. And lawyers are criminal activity also. Insurance is a criminal activity. Now, maritime shipping isn't. We used to operate shipping with strict liability, which was perfectly legal and lawful within the law of God. Be responsible for your actions. And one day we woke up here under DeLovio versus Boynton. And what was that other case back at the New Jersey Steam Navigation Company in 1848? Said, no, we're not going to be liable for our actions. We're not going to practice strict liability. And the U.S. Supreme Court has said that no commercial enterprise of any kind which conducts its activities across state lines has been held to be wholly beyond the regulatory power of Congress under the Commerce Clause. Well, once upon a time, the jurisdiction of admiralty stopped at the high tide mark. Now it doesn't. Now we're talking about vehicles. And then it can, with the same propriety and upon the same construction, be extended to contracts and ports on land when the commerce is between different states, and it may embrace also the vehicles and persons engaged in carrying it on. It would be in the power of Congress to confer admiralty jurisdiction upon its courts over the cars engaged in transporting passengers or merchandise from one state to another, and over the persons engaged in conducting them, and to deny the parties the trial by jury. Now, the judicial power in cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction has never been supposed to extend to contracts made on land and to be executed on land. But if the power of regulating commerce can be made the foundation of jurisdiction in its courts, and a new and extended admiralty jurisdiction beyond its heretofore known and admitted limits may be created on water, under what authority, or under that authority, and the same reason would justify the same exercise of power on land? And it comes from the propeller, Genese Chief, et al. Versus Fitzhaw, et al. 12 Hal 443. I mean, we're not talking about last year or the Nixon administration or Clinton. We're talking about, my God, 12 Howard Review. That goes back to the 1820s and 30s. We're not talking about something new. It's been around. Our founding fathers put it into our Constitution. It's been there. We had a choice to make, and we made a choice. The choice was, do you want to obey God and keep his commandments, or do you want to practice the pagan religions and the pagan laws of the pagan nations around us? And we said, we want paganism. We want the laws of the Romans, Egyptians, Babylonians, and Assyrians. Anything but the law of Moses. Anything. Well, okay. Now that we've got it, there's a penalty that comes down with it. And now we got this big breach of contract that I mentioned to you last week. And that breach of contract is going to be executed now pretty shortly. Fortunately for all of us, you know, there's a little time to get off this car. Now, I feel like we're riding on the Titanic. You know, there's still time to get off this thing. When it stops in Ireland, that's the time to get off. Most people aren't going to get off in Ireland. Hell, they're looking forward to going to New York on the luxury liner Titanic. Now, even when this thing leaves Ireland, you know, there's still a possibility of survival. It ain't going to be easy. But there are going to be some survivors. Remember, there were 800 and some survivors off the ship. 1,500 victims and 800 survivors. And so if I told you in advance that this is what's coming down, if I said to you, hey, you need to take action, trooper. You need to get your act together. You need to get off the ship. The next stop is the bottom of the Atlantic. If I gave you 48 hours notice, do you think you could save yourself from the Titanic? You read the book. You saw the movie. What do you think? Could you? Well, I'll tell you where I'd be at 20 minutes to 12 is in front of Lifeboat 6, because Lifeboat 6 leaves with both men and women, and only 28 people get in it, and there's room for 96. So I think the first place that I want to be standing, starting about 11:15, you know, no sense getting there late. Might as well get there a half hour early. Be standing right in front of Lifeboat 6, and then when the word comes down to abandon ship, you get right in there. Shut up, get in, sit down, fold your hands, do what you're told. And that's where we're at now with Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. I mentioned this to you the other day. I said, you know, it's time for us to sit down, shut up, and fold our hands, and do what old dad tells us for change. I know it's a wild new idea, but entertain that for a moment while we give you the mid-course correction here and tell you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. This Law Hour program is heard 7 days a week in the United States, and it's heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, nor the sponsor, management, or staff of this network, nor of this local radio station. And for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Talking about admiralty. The proximate cause of our own injury. Now, oftentimes, students call here, they complain about the People's Republic of California, Michigan, Idaho, New York, when in reality, they're all the same. All of the states all work under our federal constitution. Our federal constitution was ordered and ordained by God Almighty himself. How do I know that? Well, because it's a constitutional republic, not a democracy. And because it protects all of the Ten Commandments and espouses 22 principles of that law in our constitution and protects our right to property under the common law. That didn't happen accidentally. Now, over time, we have decided that we didn't like that law and we wanted to make some changes in it. And so we've made those changes. That's fine. You had a right to do that. You had a choice to make. In fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 30, God instructs us. He says, I want you people to make a choice. I want you to choose between me and Baal. I want you to choose between me and the Ten Commandments and my law and my benefits and Satan, Baal, and all of the benefits that he offers you under Social Security, the income tax, and the admiralty jurisdiction. I want you to choose. Then he goes on a step further and he says, now I'm going to tell you, I want you to choose life. You choose my law, you choose my statutes and judgments, and you're choosing life, and that's the smart thing to do. If you don't, you're choosing death. But hey, listen, you got a right to choose. If you want to choose death, get after it. And I'm afraid that that's where most of us are headed. We're headed toward the bottom of the Atlantic on the Titanic. There's not going to be the vast majority of people getting off this thing. There's going to be a few, but there's not going to be a great majority. Now, it's interesting that the court would recognize that the waters are public and those who engage in trade and commerce thereon can be regulated. They did not address the private use of the public waterways. By this decision, admiralty was extended to all of the navigable waters within all of the states. So aren't the highways and roads considered public roads and highways? Well, then by their own logic, the same reason would justify the same exercise of power on land to all vehicles and to all cars. So in conclusion, admiralty has a criminal jurisdiction. It is appealed from, whereas a writ of error would be used in a common law proceeding. Jurisdiction depends on the subject matter and is bound only by the nature of the cause. It is no longer restricted to the ebb and flow of the tide. And it includes maritime hypothecations and policies of insurance, interstate commerce, and transportation on land and sea. How do you like that? Now, this also affects land. It affects our ability to own land. It's called allodial tenure and title, allodial land. In England, the common law was derived from feudal tenures in real property as held by a pyramid of proprietors holding their rights from the king or the crown on down the line. The American Revolution destroyed any and all allegiance to the British crown, including the rights of property and land, and all feudal tenures and fees were overthrown. All rights of property and land in the United States became allodial titles and allodial freehold under no lord or overseer or overlord whatsoever, not even the authority of the colony or the state. And this is the reason why our founding fathers considered that they had made every man a king on his own property. In England, William Pitt summarized the concept of private property under common law as follows. He said, the poorest man may, in his cottage, bid defiance to all of the forces of the crown. It may be frail, its roof may shake, the wind may blow through it, and the storms may enter, the rain may enter. All his forces dare not cross the threshold of this single ruined tenement. All right, so there you are. Allodial land, private property, the exact opposite of the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property. Now take a look at your land, your property. Who owns it? Don't you have a mortgage? The mortgage is the prima facie evidence that you don't own it, but you do have an equitable right of possession. You have the highest and best title as long as you perform under the terms of the contract. And what did we learn about contracts? Contracts come under admiralty. Admiralty. And that's the law that deals with contracts. It's a summary process. The terms and conditions of the contract speak for themselves. So when there's a foreclosure, do you get a jury trial in a foreclosure? No. There's no jury trial in a foreclosure. They just come and sell your house on the courthouse steps, and there's a summary process. They give you an eviction notice. And if you don't get out, they send the sheriff out there, and he picks you up and moves you out. And if you give him any guff, he kills you and then hauls your dead body off to the mortuary. That's what it takes. That's what we do. Hey, boys, that's not the justice system. That's the adversarial system. That's the admiralty system. The common law of the states is founded and grounded upon substantive titles and real property, and no mere legislative enactments by Congress or the state legislature, nor judicial ruling by federal or state courts can operate to deprive the people of their rights at law. And this includes their rights inherent in their allodial land titles and to be traders at law on a cash basis, their rights to access to courts at law and to a jurisdiction where their rights are protected. The American Revolution broke the hold of English feudalism over colonial land and instantly converted all land titles to allodiums. This fact was clearly analyzed by the Supreme Court of the state of Pennsylvania in the case of Wallace versus Harmstead in 1863, when the court said, I see no way of solving this question except by determining whether our Pennsylvania titles are allodial or feudal. And it should be stated that there are only two types of land, allodial or feudal. Feudal land is owned by the king, the state, and the king, the state, collects a fee from its tenants and requires all tenants to specifically perform. Allodial land is held without subjection to any superior, and the possessor of allodial land exercises an unqualified dominion over the land. All right, now let's think about this for a minute. Do you pay a property tax on your property? Is your property feudal or allodial? If you're paying a property tax, you've got feudal land. It's owned by the state. And you're a mere renter, a tenant in possession. And as long as you pay your rent, you can stay there. Now, how do you like that? Now, God told you that he would establish you in the land and you would never be removed if you would practice those 15 agricultural laws, of which we said here in America, kiss off, God. We ain't practicing none of these dumb religious laws that you come up with. So in Leviticus chapter 25, Leviticus 25, verse 23, he says, the land shall not be sold forever because the land is mine and your strangers and sojourners with me. Now, he told us not to make merchandise and not to sell the land. And do we have licensed real estate brokers buying and selling land here in America? It violates that statute right there. It's against the law to buy and sell land. You can buy and sell houses and property in a walled city, but not outside the walled city. Now, what is this buying and selling of land outside the walled cities in violation of Leviticus 25:23? And why is it that you real estate brokers need to be licensed? Think about that. A license is permission to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. And selling land is a trespass. It's a tort. It's a crime. It's a criminal activity. It violates the law of God. And we decided that that's what we want to do. So we went to the state. We decided that we wanted to buy land not within the confines or the restrictions of the Jubilees and the land Sabbath years, but we wanted to have 10, 20, 30, 40-year mortgages. Then we got real sophisticated. We decided that we wanted to have adjustable rate mortgages. We want to put a little money down and speculate on the increased value of the property so we can sell it and make a profit. Now, Leviticus chapter 25 is the land law. It tells you this is the way I want you to conduct yourselves with regard to this land. And I want you to understand that none of you people down there on planet Earth can own one square foot of it. No land. I own it all. And if you want to buy, sell, and trade land, you do so under my rules. And we said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to make up our own rules. And we did it unilaterally. And we did it after we agreed in 1329 B.C. to obey God and keep his commandments as recorded in Exodus 24, verse 7. After we ratified the agreement in blood, put it in the Ark of the Covenant, then we went ahead and breached the contract. We've done this more than once. And we've gone into national captivity more than once, and we're on the verge of going into national captivity again. And that's not going to be fun, and it's not going to be pleasant. So you need to ask yourselves, you know, do I really want to do this? Is it really necessary for me to go out here and violate all these laws and accrue all of these penalties? Maybe it would be time for us to back off a little bit and say, well, you know, maybe we've pushed the old man as far as we're going to push him. You know, we back off and see if we can't ameliorate his wrath a little bit, see if we can't get off the hook. Now, it should be stated that there's only two types of land on planet Earth, two types of land. And it's either allodial or it's feudal, allodial or feudal. Now, in the United States, every estate in fee simple is held as absolutely and unconditionally as is the state's right of eminent domain, fee simple. Continuing, the court said, I venture to suggest that much of the confusion of ideas that prevails on this subject has come from our retaining since the American Revolution of the feudal nomenclature of estates and tenures as fee, freehold, heirs, feoffments, and the like. Our question then narrows itself down to this. Is fealty any part of our land tenures? And what Pennsylvanian has ever obtained his lands by openly and humbly kneeling before his Lord, being ungirt, uncovered, and holding up his hands both together between those of his Lord, who sat before him, and there professing that he did become his man from that day forth, for life and limb and certainly honor, and then receiving a kiss from his Lord? This was the oath of fealty which was, according to Sir Martin Wright, the essential feudal bond so necessary to the very notion of a feud. We are then to regard the Revolution and these acts of assembly as emancipating every acre of soil of Pennsylvania from the grand characteristics of the feudal system, even as to the lands held by the proprietaries, the city of Philadelphia themselves. They held them as other citizens held under the Commonwealth, and that by a title which is purely allodial. The Revolution did emancipate every acre of soil within the United States from the grand characteristics of the feudal system. All lands are allodial, and they cannot be taken away by the state, nor can the state demand a specific performance tax on the individual possessing the land. Now, boys and girls, how many of you possess your land? How many of you own your land in allodial tenure title? And I would venture a guess and say none. Zero. Zilch. What happened to our allodial tenure and title? Well, we sold it. We sold it. And how did we sell it? By mortgaging it. And then the state came in and said, well, wouldn't you like to have a school down the street? And we said, oh, yeah. And we voted in the school. And so we've got these bonds as notes, as collateral against our land. They come to you every so often. They say, hey, listen, wouldn't you like to have streets and sewers and gutters and paved streets and lights and schools and hospitals. What do you think you're paying this property tax for? Well, boys and girls, you know about every acre of land in the United States of America, and I'd guesstimate probably all over the entirety of Israel, is now, in some way, under some kind of a bond. We went to our state, put our hands up before the state of Pennsylvania, but before the state of California, oh, please, won't you pave our streets and give us sewers and water and gas and lights and all these neat things? And let Mutual of Omaha pay it with our insurance premiums? And we became the state's man. And you think that was real smart, dude? All right, now don't get mad at God because he told you not to do that, and you should be living on your land without any property tax. You should be practicing the lodial tenure title, and you should be paying your tithe and not your income tax, and you should be living your life preparing for your own old age on your own land with your own money without the state or Social Security or Mutual of Omaha or anybody else promising you anything. Because after all, they can't give you any more than they first take from you, and they've got to administer it, so it's going to cost you something more than what you give them. You're going to get back something less than you paid in. How much less? Well, in the case of Social Security, you'll get paid 27% of what you pay in if you're rich. How much was it now if you're middle class? For every $2.73 you pay in, you get a dollar back. And if you're poor, for every dollar you pay in, you get 68 cents back. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, no matter how long you look, you'll only find two forms of this law on planet Earth. It's either the common law or the civil law, one or the other. And there are no others. Among other things, they may be called law. You know, there's other things that we call law, but they're only the forms of the civil law. The common law is the law of Moses. The common law is the law of God, in contradistinction to the civil law of the states, codes, rules, and regulations, which are in writing, right in front of us. The Constitution provides for only three jurisdictions within those two forms of law: the common law, admiralty, and equity. Admiralty and equity are both civil law jurisdictions and come to us from paganism. The forms of actions under the common law are civil and criminal. And under admiralty, there are civil and criminal, and under equity, there is only civil actions. Therefore, all jurisdictions have cognizance over civil actions as distinguished from criminal matters, depending upon the subject matter and controversy and nature of the cause. If an action at common law, whether it's civil or criminal, is properly brought into a common law court, the court is bound by the principles, the rules, and the procedures of the common law. If the action, either civil or criminal, is properly brought before an equity or admiralty court, the court is bound by the principles, the rules, and the procedures of the civil law dealing with the subject matter in admiralty. Now remember, equity has no cognizance over criminal matters, and therefore criminal actions must be prosecuted either in the jurisdiction of the common law or in admiralty. No admiralty court in the land has any jurisdiction to hear common law issues. However, common law courts can hear admiralty issues and must proceed using the procedures of the civil law. State courts have concurrent jurisdiction in both common law and maritime law with regard to certain types of cases and subject matter. If the subject matter or nature of the cause is maritime, then even if it is heard in a common law court, that court is bound to apply the maritime law and rules of procedure to the case. So note that maritime law is a class of cases heard in courts of admiralty. And the best judicial treatise on the subject of jurisdiction is contained in the very early case wherein Judge Baldwin gave us some of these famous statements. He said, "It is also needless to combat the proposition that the civil jurisdiction of admiralty was more expanded in the colonies than in the mother country." He said that in Baines versus the schooner James. And in the preamble to the Declaration of the Rights of the Colonies in October of 1774, one of the grievances complained of was that Parliament had, by late acts, extended the jurisdiction of the courts of admiralty not only for collecting said duties, but for causes arising within the body of a country. You know, what our founding fathers went to war against England for, we have accepted and done it voluntarily and practically insisted and voted for this admiralty jurisdiction. Voted it in. We surely haven't resisted it. Don't ever claim that it was foisted off upon you against your will and over your objection. I'll guarantee you God isn't going to buy that one for a minute. You've accepted these credit cards and checks and mortgages on your houses with open arms. He said it was also resolved that the following acts of Parliament are infringements and violations of the rights of the colonists and that the repeal of them is essentially necessary. He said the several acts, and he named them, which imposed duties for the purpose of raising revenue in America, extended the power of the admiralty beyond their ancient limits, and they're subversive of our American rights. Well, if they were subversive of our American rights in 1787, aren't they just as subversive of our American rights today in 2006? You think that these 20 million illegal aliens come into the United States, you think they understand any of this? You think they're going to vote? You think they're going to vote admiralty out and the common law in?
I tell you, boys and girls, the people that are native born and went to school here and are white in color don't understand what the hell's happening here and couldn't care less. You know, you can't make a change until you first understand that there's a problem. The people of America, whether they're illegal aliens or they were born and educated here, don't even know there's a problem. You have had imposed upon you a tyranny that King George didn't even impose upon you. You got a King George, all right. And King George is imposing this tyranny upon you. You know, for the most part, Americans are sitting back saying, I think I'll vote for the Republican Party again. I think I'll vote Republican. Those good folks that gave you Iraq and Afghanistan, the Patriot Act, and the opportunity to bend over and spread your cheeks before you get on the airliner and take off your shoes. The good folks, you know, at the Congress of the United States and the White House. He said, these provisions go to the root of the criminal jurisdiction of the Admiralty and over offenses committed on the high sea. Thus far, the American people have solemnly affirmed their declaration of rights and excluded from the Admiralty a branch of jurisdiction which the statutes of England authorized them to exercise. And it remains to inquire whether they have, by the same instrument, enlarged the civil jurisdiction of the Admiralty so as to extend it to the causes arising within the body of the country, which were cognizable exclusively by the courts of common law in England. Well, we've now got the answer. The answer is yes, we are going to extend Admiralty inland to every cause that deals with contracts in downtown Chicago and downtown Austin, Texas. Well, okay, but don't complain, boys and girls, about the People's Republic of Michigan or the People's Republic of Texas. You wanted it, and if you didn't want it, you didn't resist it. And your failure to resist, boys and girls, always keep in mind that rape requires resistance, and your failure to resist is acquiescence. Rape requires resistance, and without resistance, it ain't rape. Hey, we're running out of time again. I got to leave it right there, so we've got to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour and the law school, please go to our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. Again, for more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening. And good night, friends.